Paris Update readers of a certain age will undoubtedly know Les Liaisons Dangereuses from Stephen Frears' 1988 movie adaptation, starring Glenn Close, John Malkovich, Michelle Pfeiffer, Keanu Reeves and Uma Thurman, quite a lineup. Or they might know it from Christopher Hampton's earlier stage version. And slightly younger readers might well know it from the 1999 updated cinematic version called Cruel Intentions. But I would hazard a guess that relatively few viewers of these shows have gone to the source of the story, Pierre Chaudelot de Laclos's novel, which was first published in 1782. Now, as wonderful as all those famous adaptations are, I would argue that they only manage to recapture a small part of the novel's essence. And this is just one reason why I would urge anybody who has not read Laclos's original to take advantage of the current enforced shutdown to read it. The element that makes Les Liaisons Dangereuses such a complex and effective book is the fact that it is an epistolary novel, that is, a novel made up entirely of letters. The epistolary novel was particularly popular in the 18th century in both France and Britain, and Samuel Richardson had already published his epistolary novels Pamela and Clarissa, which Laclos certainly knew about. Indeed, one of the characters in The Liaison, the Présidente de Tourvel, even has a copy of Clarissa on her bedside table. And in France, the famous 18th century French philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau had published an epistolary novel, Julie ou la Nouvelle Héloïse, in 1761, which turned out to be the best-selling book of the age. The major difference between the Rousseau and Laclos texts, however, is in the different ways in which each writer exploits the letter format. Where Rousseau only includes letters exchanged between two lovers, Laclos's book is made up of several correspondents, giving it a much more multi-layered texture. Now, even though the central axis of the Laclos novel revolves around the correspondence between the Marquise de Merteuil and the Comte de Valmont as they rigorously plan their seduction of various characters, we are given the contrasting viewpoints of many others, with a variety of letter writers writing to a range of different correspondents. And sometimes a single incident is described in radically different ways by varying characters in successive letters. For example, often we read chilling descriptions by Valmont or Merteuil of their seduction of various victims, followed by their victims' very different perspectives of what happened. Perhaps the feature that truly distinguishes Laclos from Rousseau is in the way that every letter is psychologically plausible, written at a time and in a context that makes complete sense in driving the plot forward. Rousseau, by contrast, even has the leading male character implausibly continuing to write a letter to his lover after she has entered his room. One of the most extraordinary letters in the Liaisons Dangereuses is the passionate love letter written by Valmont to the pious married woman Madame de Tourvel in letter 48, which we already know from the previous letter from Valmont to Merteuil was written by him using a prostitute's back as his writing desk. So that where Tourvel would interpret this letter as a genuine avowal of love, our knowledge of the context in which the letter was written makes us view the letter in a very different light. Now, young readers can sometimes be extraordinarily moralistic when reading literature, and I would suggest that Les Liaisons Dangereuses is the ideal work for them to read in order to make them question their assumptions. Often I've had students describing the book as immoral because of the depiction of Merteuil and Valmont's libertine desires and actions. Yet, I would say on the contrary that the book is in many ways deeply moral, but not from the perspective that we might normally make moral assumptions. Merteuil and Valmont construct a rigorous moral system that relies on absolute complicity between the two of them in order to carry out their aims. And the moment that their complicity begins to crumble, with Merteuil's famous cry to Valmont, "Eh bien, la guerre!" Oh well, then, it's war! Then their whole constructed system crumbles also. Now, some critics have tried to interpret the date of the appearance of the book just 7 years before the French Revolution as foreseeing the destruction of libertine aristocratic ideals and the overthrow of the monarchy, because all the main characters in the novel come from noble families. But just as it is possibly futile for us to try and recast motives simply because we know what happened afterwards, Laclos himself enjoyed the patronage of the Duke of Orleans, and the book was praised and appreciated by members of the royal family, including Marie Antoinette. So, to my mind, it is impossible to imply simplistic historical or moral readings of Les Liaisons Dangereuses. The book, with its variety of perspectives, is far too subtle for that. Just read Letter 81, where Merteuil explains the background to the choices she has made in her life as a woman in a male-driven world, and you will see quite how multi-layered the book is. Now, if you wish to read the book in translation, I would recommend Helen Constantine's translation in Penguin Classics. Happy reading.